Shut up and sit down.
Another edition of our weekly hockey podcast with me, Tim Benz, and Brian Metzer here at Breakfast with Benz at Trib Live. Metz, you can hear him during the Penguin season on 105.9 The X in Pittsburgh, the flagship station for Penguins hockey. Post-game intermission, Pens Live weekly on Saturdays, along with Paul Steigerwald. Metz, thanks a lot for taking time to join us. As always, the conference finals move on, and based on the time we're taping up right now here on Tuesday morning, we're staring potentially at a sweep for the Florida Panthers over the Carolina Hurricanes. That's something I wasn't anticipating. I actually liked the Florida Panthers in the East. Did you? I didn't like them in a sweep, but I thought they'd win.
Yeah, it's kind of like I got into a little bit last week, Tim, just based on what they've been doing and the way Sergei Bobrovsky's been playing. For me, that might be the best goalie in terms of how he's playing left in the playoffs right now, because we thought Jake Oettinger maybe was in that conversation, and he's looked, you know, pretty good, but he's also looked human against the Golden Knights. So for me, if you're going to get the kind of performances that they're getting from Bob, and then I phrase it this way before, the ballad of Matthew Tkachuk and the Florida Panthers continues to be written day in and day out. They just are playing a very solid style of hockey. They get timely goal scoring, and they're getting outstanding goaltending. And when you get that kind of goaltending in the Stanley Cup playoffs, you get these kinds of results. And so maybe I didn't anticipate a sweep, but I'm not surprised to see them on the cusp of advancing to the Stanley Cup final. I actually had them pulling this off against Vegas, I think, in my view, just based on what we had been looking at in the last few weeks. And it looks like it might go into a Vegas versus Florida Stanley Cup final, at least as we're where we sit today.
What's that do for ratings? What's that do for NHL international appeal for the final?
I think it's fun for hockey fans just because you got some different teams. You got the Golden Knights story still kind of evolving from where they were when they broke into the league. But if I was a network vice president or running a network, I'd have a little bit of concern just based on the fact that neither of those teams are household names. They have done a fairly decent job on the broadcasts of highlighting the Tkachuk situation, U.S.-born players that they can kind of market a little bit. They've been really trumpeting up Jack Eichel, which is another U.S.-born player, and they, you know, this is his chance to kind of make a name against where he came in the draft behind Connor McDavid, and his career hasn't gone the same way as McDavid up to this point. So I think you have good storylines, but if you're not a hockey fan already, I think you have some concern, at least in terms of pulling in a national audience for these games. That said, it seems like there's a decent level of excitement for the Stanley Cup playoffs still at this point, even though there aren't any true, you know, original six household type name teams involved at this point.
Can Eichel be reinvented to be what he was supposed to be when he came in the league, like a true number two to McDavid, or is that too late now?
I think he can still make a pretty good name for himself. I mean, they've been around for quite a while. However, success in the Stanley Cup playoffs can do a lot for a guy's career. And look no further than Phil Kessel, Tim, because he at one point was looked at as the number one overall draft pick in his draft year. He ended up falling almost out of the top five that year. And he had a good career, don't get me wrong, but he washed out of Boston, he washed out of Toronto, and people were talking about him as if he was some sort of pouter and he didn't work hard and all of this. He gets to Pittsburgh, he wins a couple of cups, and all of a sudden everyone loves Phil Kessel. So I just think it can be a similar type situation. Jack Eichel's had some really solid seasons in the league, but he's also had some duds. He's had some moments where he was looked at as a bit petulant, a bit bratty. He kind of comes across as kind of like butthead,
sourpuss,
butthead fame. Yeah, very much a sourpuss, and he almost looks like butthead. I mean, to be honest, not to be rude. I think all of that kind of falls. Exactly, and so that was pretty spot on there, my friend. But he's been outstanding in the playoffs. He's been their best player, if not one of, you know, he and Mark Stone are leading the charge here. He looks really good. He scores big goals, or he's involved in scoring big goals. And he looks like the guy that they thought he would be coming out of college, which was going to be one of the best players on the planet. So to your point, Can he be a true number two to McDavid? I don't know that anybody really is based on what Connor does, but I think he can look pretty good as a number two overall draft pick at this point. If he ends up getting that Stanley Cup that has been able to evade Connor McDavid to this point, that would be a nice big feather in the cap of Jack Eichel. And I think he has a chance to just move forward and really build a solid NHL career the rest of the way, in which he maybe is, you know, I heard a great comparison actually the other night. Somebody said, I don't know if I was listening to one of the wrap-up shows or something, and they said, maybe he's not going to be a 100-point scorer in this league, which it looked like for a while he was on the cusp of becoming. Maybe he is just a point-a-game guy that goes out and helps teams win a championship. And there's nothing wrong with that. They almost made a comparison to being, and this is a bit of a, this is hyperbole that you get in the playoffs, but they said maybe he becomes a Steve Yzerman type where he can lead a team, help them win, and still put up, you know, 80 to 90 points a year. And I think a lot of people would be very thrilled if Jack Eichel could be that kind of player.
Yeah, I mean, stylistically, points-wise, I guess I can see that more than I can, at least from a perceived character leadership point of view.
Yes.
I mean, Yzerman was always viewed as that. And like you said, I mean, if we're going to reinvent Jack Eichel, that's totally reinventing him. I was just talking about trying to get back to the skill player, the star player that everybody was making him out to be. Like, for instance, Crosby and Ovechkin always had each other. There seemed to be a natural McDavid-Eichel thing there because of the hype of the two guys going into the draft. And now I feel like it's almost like we've been looking for some other number two the whole time to
yep.
Connor McDavid. And with Eichel and the neck prognosis and all that, it just felt like the NHL had given up on him as a foil. And now it was like, hey, can it be Connor versus Connor? Connor McDavid versus Connor Bedard? But
yep.
You make some compelling points about what Eichel could eventually be, especially if he gets that cup first before McDavid. It's kind of turned into McDavid versus the cup, to be honest.
I would agree with that. And when you even look at their draft year, Tim, there's really nobody. You know what? It's almost the draft of reinvented players, because McDavid's the only one that really lived up to the hype. You had Jack Eichel kind of be good and bad. Noah Hanifin kind of flamed out, but he's still floating around. He's been decent. But Dylan Strome suddenly washes out of the desert, becomes a really good player with Washington. Lawson Crouse didn't really make it happen where he was drafted. He moves on, and now he's been an effective player. Marner was really good, so maybe Marner's the closest to McDavid out of that draft. But Pavel Zacha was another one that reinvented himself by going to the Boston Bruins, because he washed out of the New Jersey organization when you look at guys that were in that draft, just generally speaking. So there's a number of these guys that have kind of had to move on and do some other good things. One other big name that probably could be not, you know, he's not close to McDavid in that draft was Mikko Rantanen out in Colorado. Barzell's there, Kyle Connor. There was talent, but McDavid was the cream of the crop, and everyone thought Jack Eichel would be the guy right there next to him. And so this is his chance to kind of, I don't know, kind of push it down McDavid's throat a little bit and say, yeah, you may be putting up all these numbers and winning all these individual accolades and trophies, et cetera, but I got a Stanley Cup. And I think when you get that cup, it changes the perception of guys. Phil Kessel really is the chief example, because once he got those championships, I think people looked at him a little bit differently than they did before he had those championships. And if Eichel beats McDavid to the finish line there, he's not going to, you know, jump past him in any way. But people might look at Jack in a very, very certainly a different light than they do heading into these playoffs even. Because there were moments this year where you recall, I mean, people were saying he and the coach were at odds. He and Cassidy weren't on the same page. Jack was kind of in the doghouse. But then he turned it around again and he started putting up numbers and he looked pretty good. And now in the playoffs, he's been lights out. So for his sake, I hope he can find a way to continue to be that player. And like you said, he's not going to be Steve Yzerman by any means, but if he can become some sort of team leader out there, it's easier maybe in Vegas for him because he's not under a microscope like he would be in a bigger hockey market. He can do that, win a championship potentially if they pull this off and continue to have that kind of career. I think that would be good for him.
Brian Metzer, Pittsburgh Penguins Radio Network, here on the Breakfast with Bens podcast. Mets, let's also take a look at what's going on in Arizona in the Logan Cooley situation. I find that very interesting just from the local perspective and his decision to go back to Minnesota. What do you think's going on with the Coyotes, and what do you think's going on with Cooley and his thought to stay in college for another year?
Can you imagine if he just pushes this to become a free agent? That would just be awesome for the league, because I love those kinds of stories. And then all of a sudden people will start ripping Cooley and say, you just play for who drafted you, etc. But in a way, I don't know that I blame them. I mean, things are so in flux there right now. They just lost the big election last week, I believe it was, where they had another referendum on the agenda to try and get a new arena built. Their social media team has been kind of really weird over the last week, too, putting it out like Twitter polls saying, hey, Tim Benz, vote on where you'd like us to build our new arena. It's like, what is this? So I think he looks at all of this and says, you know, I'm going to give this a year. I'll go back to school, maybe finish what they started, you know, get a chance to win a championship in college, potentially be a big man on campus, and then break into the league and see what happens. If he's going to come in and be a Coyote, if he's going to, you know, move on and do something else. Cause did he ever sign his entry level deal with them and he just keeps going back to school? I don't recall that. I might be leaving that out. So he may not be a free agent at some point, but the bottom line is, in my view, this is a matter of a wait and see approach to see what's going to exactly happen. Now, he's missing out on playing in a college arena if he just would have gone to the desert and played, because they're going to be playing in the college arena again this season at Mullet.
Brian Metzer, Pittsburgh Penguins Radio Network. Mets, let's get to some Penguins talk, and let's get to your thoughts on where the general manager search sits right now. Is it a general manager search with Kyle Dubas, or is this president of hockey ops that we're talking about?
Well, before all heck broke loose with the Toronto Maple Leafs, I think there was a search going on. And because we had heard the Dubas thing, and I may have said this to you last week. Were you super surprised to see Dubas come in, even though it goes against what he said last week? I wasn't. I thought that was pillow talk about it's Toronto or bust for me. If not, I'll be home with my family. I'm like, get out of here. You're going to take that interview. And if you get a chance at the job, you'd probably leap at it for no other reason other than to ram it down Toronto's throats for letting you go. And then on top of that, I think people want to be the guy to say, I can fix it. It's Jeff Spicoli with his dad's tools. You know, it's sitting here, we're like, I can fix it. And I think he thinks he can. I just hope that it doesn't end up being the way that Spicoli did fix it, because we already had Ron Hextall smash up the car and leave it laying to make it look like someone else did it. So all that said, I think it is a Dubas situation where he's going to come in. They're going to talk to him. He probably has the inside track on the job if they can make that work. The biggest shocker for me is the emergence of Eddie Olczyk's name all of a sudden as a president of hockey ops type. So I think that there's a search there still. There's some different names being involved. There's John Chyka, who was out in the desert, speaking of the Coyotes, and he had some issues there. They've been impressed by him from what it sounds like. I think someone like a Jason Karmanos, who was interviewing for the GM job, could be a president of hockey ops type as well. But for me, the emergence of somebody like an Eddie Olczyk, who is beloved in hockey circles, probably more beloved in the moment than even like a Brian Burke was, because that was kind of, some people raised eyebrows when he was brought into the role. If you can get someone like an Edzo there to be a mouthpiece for ownership, to be the go-between Boston and Pittsburgh in that regard, and then you have a Kyle Dubas come in with the analytics outlook, a younger guy, forward-thinking, he would be able to build the front office of their dreams with, they talked about getting some female candidates involved, maybe some people of Keller involved. I think Dubas is open to doing that, just forward thinking and getting maybe even new young hockey people involved. I think that ends up giving them exactly what they want. You have the old school guy to be the mouthpiece and go out and meet the media and do all the glad handing, while Dubas can kick back, do his job, build that hockey ops analytics group and get to work of rebuilding the Pittsburgh Penguins. So I'm not going to be shocked if you see some combo like that come together, probably in the very near future.
The thing about Dubas and what he said before, you know, you referred to it as pillow talk. It just felt to me like there was the option to get out of that if it was Toronto in the end that pulled the plug on their deal, as opposed to him leaving on his own.
Yeah.
To your point, I get that. But at the same time, also, if he is sincerely like on the verge of burnout after this year was so hard for him and his family, then sit out a year and take the Ottawa gig then, and then you can really screw over Toronto. I guess I don't understand the need then to come right back and go to the Penguins, which is a difficult situation. And if you're going to bring in Ed Olczyk above you potentially, and you're going to bring in, or you already have Mike Sullivan as the coach, That seems like a lot of chefs all of a sudden in the kitchen, doesn't it?
It's an awful lot of chefs, and you have the opportunity for, you know, bodies crashing into one another there and egos crashing into one another there, because the, you know, people acted like Mike Sullivan wasn't involved in this GM search and he, you know, didn't have much say in it, but you very quietly seen him kind of collect power in a vacuum and being the only person in the organization at this point. I mean, I know there were figureheads and people who were not interim, but just kind of running the day to day until they get somebody in. Well, in the meantime, you just talked about it in a piece that you did, and Sully, you know, talking about his plan for the American Hockey League. That's one thing to do it that way. But the last time we started hearing global organizational thinking in that style, it came from the general manager, and Ray Shiro built it from the top down and said, I want the same kind of thinking from the Pittsburgh organization down through Wilkes-Barre Scranton, down into Wheeling, so that everybody knows, all three of those coaches know that this is how we play hockey, and this is how we want the train, these guys trained. This is how we want the prospects trained. Well, now it's Mike Sullivan saying that. So what if you have Dubas or any other GM come in with a different philosophy? Then for sure you're going to have some heads banging there. I don't think that the emergence of somebody like an Eddie Olczyk would be that problematic in terms of you know, being another chef in the kitchen, if he's really going to just be more of a go-between from ownership and the team. But that said, it's a lot of big name guys that have a lot of history in the league that I think would knock heads a little bit. And the point you just made is a very valid one, Tim. If Kyle Dubas is burned out and he's not all in, it's you may be putting yourself in a bad situation, and maybe that alone is a reason to look in another direction. But it seemed like with all the talk and all the smoke, there's some fire there that the two sides at least wanted to hear each other out. And it seems like Fenway is interested in him more than they may have been interested in some of the other candidates. I mean, I know Tolsky was there. He thinks in the same kind of ways as Dubas with the analytic thinking. Chyka is somebody that thinks that way as well. And I was surprised maybe that they didn't get a president of hockey ops that with more of an analytic view of things. I mean, I don't know that Edzo would be that. So it's kind of a weird situation. Do they want names? Do they want unknowns? What do they want to do here? All the names you and I talked about last week are essentially falling to the floor, and these other two seem to be rising to the surface. So maybe Dubas has worked it out with his family that, hey, Pittsburgh's a good place to live. Let's go check that out if that ends up working out for him.
That theory about the analytics being the core of who Dubas is or Tolsky, you know, Pierre Maguire made an interesting point when we had him on, and I followed up with him about it after he had talked to Mark Madden about it, about how the analytics teams, the teams that are built around the premise of advanced numbers, tend to do really well in the regular season, but they often run out of steam in the playoffs because the playoffs are such a different animal than the regular season. And he pointed to a couple examples of that again this year. So what do you think, Mets? Is there too much reliance on players who fit that style because they tend to be a little bit on the smaller side as opposed to the bump and grind and clutch and grab and dirty play that we've seen in the postseason this year?
Oh, yeah. I completely concur, because that's what will be the biggest problem here for the Pittsburgh Penguins. You have to find the right mix, because for all the analytics that you can bake into it, people live and die by the spreadsheets and all of the numbers. I've heard one too many stories about guys gaming the system, even in terms of contracts. I just heard a story over this last season, Tim. A guy was going to be a free agent the next year, and he knew that he didn't do those things as well as he should. So every time into the zone, the guy just started throwing the puck to the net. Throw the puck to the net. All of a sudden, his analytics look great for that season, and people are going to roll their eyes and say, Matt, just shut up. That's not how it is. But a guy gamed it. He gamed the system just by doing it and making his analytics look a little bit number in terms of shot production and, you know, producing chances from even high danger areas, just throwing pucks to the net. And he went back to being the same player he always was the next year after he signed his contract. So I think you have to find the right mix, because analytics never, it doesn't include the intangible, and people think that that's not important. It very much is. Heart and soul and grind and grit, that comes into play. I mean, like you just said, you get to the playoffs, there are people throwing these haymakers, they're throwing big hits, they're going to kill you in the corner if you're small. If all you can do is just skate and create chances, that's not always enough to win a Stanley Cup. You can't even score your way to a Stanley Cup. You have to have the right mix of everything. And I just heard another great example, and this plays into that. And you heard it with Toronto even, when they said, well, boy, they're creating chances, you know, chance after chance after chance, all these great opportunities. And they brought up the opportunity of, or the story of the guy from the Boston Bruins talking to Cam Neely back in the day. And his agent said, well, Cam creates a lot of chances. And they said to him, I don't pay Cam to create chances. I pay him to score goals. And that's what you're seeing with Carolina right now too, Tim. They outshot the Panthers last night, 25-7 in the final two periods, 11-2 in the third, and they lost the game 1-0 because they're built to be a team that produces shots and produces opportunities, and they're kind of wilting under the heavy game of the Florida Panthers. So I think that that's very key. You've got to get the right mix. So I think that's a very valid point made by Pierre, and it's I'm glad he brought it up with Mark, because that's exactly what you need to do. You're not going to win strictly on analytics and being a skating team that produces shots.
Did you try to talk Jágr into coming back and playing for the Penguins?
I saw your photo.
You went out to that card thing in Monroeville, huh?
Yeah, I can only credit myself, Tim, because, you know, one weekend of hanging out with him, and now he's putting on his Instagram, I will be back. So I think that, you know, I broke through. I got some.
Well, wait a minute. What did he post on Instagram? I didn't see that. He just said, I'll be back. What, was he in the arena? Was that the shot that he was there with Acklin? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, he has a it's from the day that he went down with the Penguins. He's sitting in the locker stall that says Jágr, and he's got that framed newspaper beside him. And he's looking at the camera, and it just says, I will be back. He's sitting in the stall. So, you know, I brokered the deal. What can I say? I mean, I made it happen. I can't get into it. I can't give you the specifics, but I was pretty thrilled. But it, you know what? It was awesome. I had to go out and meet Yags, because I only covered his career as a visitor, never got to cover him as a Pittsburgh Penguin. I don't know if the beginning part of your media career, if you covered Yags.
I did. Yeah, the last year here for him was my first year in Pittsburgh. So the year that they ended up losing to the Devils in the conference finals.
Okay. So that was your first year. I didn't start covering the Penguins until Sid's second year, Gino and Letang's first. So this will be my 18th season coming up with the Penguins or covering the Penguins. So I missed Yags. I only covered him as a visitor a few times. And so I'm like, you know what? This guy's a living legend. I got to go meet Jágr. Grew up watching him like we all did. I mean, geez, he's only a few years older than us, Tim, and he broke into the league when we were high schoolers, and it was a thrill. I told him who I was and what I did, and he said, oh, that's great. He goes, I love this, first of all, because I said, I didn't get to cover much of your career, Yags, and listen to this. He said, you were probably too young. And I said, yeah, you're right. I was too young, Yags. And then he said, how is Mike Lang? He right away asked about Mike Lang, and he told me to tell Mikey he said hello.
Well, I'm intrigued by the I will be back thing. Hopefully that means for a jersey retirement. And if it does mean coming back and playing, could it be any worse than some of the veterans that they brought in last year? I still think he can help Michael Granlin get better. Let me put it to you that way. So
I think he brings more to a power play than Jeff Carter could. That's for sure.
Mets, thanks. Appreciate it. We'll talk again next week. All right. Look forward to the big concert in Columbus. We'll do that for Tool this week, and then we'll talk more hockey next week.
I'm looking forward to it, my friend. We are going to traipse across the Rust Belt, see some tools, see some Godsmack, and Lord knows, maybe even a couple other bands if we get there early enough. But beyond that, it's going to be a blast, and we'll get back to this next week for sure. Thank you for having me, as always.
Brian Metzer, Pittsburgh Penguins Radio Network.